Good morning.
Good morning.
How was your trip to Chicago?
It's fantastic. Chilly, but really good. It's always a fun time down there. So all those eager brewers that want to learn all sorts of new stuff. Or then you always have the three or four that sit there with their arms folded because they're from gigantic production breweries that, you know, and they know it all already.
And they're better than you. So James was down at the Siebel Institute teaching pole dancing, I think?
Advanced pole dancing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah. No, stupid.
But wouldn't that have been fun, too?
Yeah, nobody wants to see that because it'll last like 3 seconds and then there'll be... The ambulance will be there because I am very poorly coordinated. And, you know, most of my joints are bad.
Ah, okay.
So that helps the curmudgeon-y old man, fuels him inside of me.
Your flexibility is not what it used to be.
Isn't that the truth?
Especially when it comes to IPA varieties, but please continue.
Yeah, my beer flexibility is completely gone. But no, I was teaching hop chemistry and brewing chemistry and sensory science to the advanced master brewers course. And it's always a good time. It's always a good time to be in front of all those brewers and get to see their faces when I show them data that tells them that all the stuff they've been doing is wrong or there's no basis in fact. And they're like, well, what do you mean? There's no way that you don't have to leave hops in for more than 4 hours to get, and dry hop. And we leave ours in for 2 weeks. I'm like, you're dumb. Because here's all the data that shows that at 23 degrees Celsius, you've done a full extraction on your dry hop in 4 hours. So what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's just not how you do it. Well, you're dumb. So,
follow
the data.
So are these all seasoned brewers, or is some of your class, brewers-to-be or home brewers looking for the next level?
That's a different class. Mm-hmm. So there's basically fundamentals of brewing science, and then I don't even see those folks because it's just the chemistry we talk about is way too deep. For them, they're still trying to understand why their water chemistry is important. Mm-hmm. I teach the advanced track stuff. So these are all folks that have been in brewing for a while at different levels. They could be massive production brewers. Like this last one, we had two of the line brewer guys there from the brewery that makes Tecate.
Mm.
And we had a couple of people. We had one person there from Kirin. And another person there from Sapporo. But then everybody else was some level of, quote, craft brewery, which, what does that mean anymore?
Mm-hmm.
But they were non-large-scale production brewers. You've got to change your angle, you know, how you're talking to these people, because some people want to know all about everything there is to know about hot pellets. But like the Kirin and Sapporo and Tecate people, they're like, dude, we're 100% extract.
Wow.
We don't use actual hop product. We use advanced modified, chemically modified alpha acids so they stay light stable and things like that. Tell us about that. Tell us about the issues of kettle injecting versus inline injecting CO2 extracts and blah, blah, blah. So it runs the gamut. Hmm. And it's a very, very intense couple of days.
Nice. Very nice. Do they all bring samples from their breweries?
No, they do not.
Oh, boo.
But the day before I got there, they went to Breese Malting in Wisconsin. And if you look on there, because this isn't right, I'm in Madison, so it's 2.5-3 hours from downtown, which is where the institute is. And if you look on their schedule, it says that their trip to Breese Malting is titled Behind the Cheddar Curtain.
Oh, I love it.
And so they were all in Wisconsin the day before, and sometimes I'll meet them there mm-hmm. for that day because it's just fun to hang out with the guys from Breese. But it's their opportunity to get all this Wisconsin beer, mostly New Glarus, because they can't get it in Chicago. And so then they're like, oh, hey, let's taste all these beers. And that's what we do after we do the hop rub. and the sensory sessions on Friday, they open the Bierstube, and we just drink their beer samples that they brought back with them. So they're unloading all this beer, you know, and it's like, hey, yeah, James, you know, this is from so-and-so brewery from your neck of the woods. I'm like, yeah, no thanks. No, I don't think so. And I'm like, doesn't everybody have any good beer? And they're like, I have some new Glarus. I'm like, now you're talking. Open those babies up.
Yeah, all the others have sort of been there, done that at that point.
Well, that, and they're just not good.
Well,
so, yeah. I was like, I understand. You guys are all excited, but I don't drink that crap here. So, anyway, that's what I was doing. And it's always fun. So I do that a few times a year.
Very nice. That does sound like a good time.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's Chicago. And so we had some questions this week about harvester design.
Yep, we sure did.
And you're seeing a lot of these right now, at least, you know, we're coming up upon the season in North America. And on the Hop Growers Forum, the U.S. Hop Growers Forum, people are selling harvesters, selling balers as folks get out of business or upgrade to something larger. But I think more it's the former than the latter.
Right.
But you're seeing all these folks selling harvesters and talking about how they work and what the mechanics are behind them. So we had some questions in terms of how do you put one of these together if I want to do it myself?
Right. And I think we talked earlier, I don't remember which episode it was, right? About, I think I'd made mentions like, hey, if anybody's going to, you know, be designing their own little harvester, you know, let me know because I could give you some pointers, some critical aspects. And Mark in Australia, he was the one that pinged me and said, hey, you said to let you know, and I'm interested. So I said, why don't you post that on the Discord server? And so that's where this all started. Mm-hmm. And some back and forth. And I said, you know what? I think we could get a whole episode out of this.
Oh, yeah.
So
some great pictures on the Discord server, too, of how people are doing their thing.
Right, right. So, yeah, if you're designing your own harvester, I thought let's just have a chit-chat because we've done it a few times. And I think you even told me, Greg, didn't you say you found an old Bind 3060 for sale?
Yes, online? Just the other day. I think it was on the Hop Growers Forum. Someone was selling one. They were the second owner.
Ah, and, yes.
You know, we're looking to move it on to a third owner.
Mm-hmm.
But they had it in a truck bed. They were just driving around with it.
Taking it to the mall with them.
Sure.
Yeah, why display. Not?
I think it was going to be in a President's Day parade this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. Yep.
As their float.
So let's talk about this. Let's talk about the really critical things that will help improve your small harvester out of the gate. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to go through so many iterations because, well, think about it. How many times a year do you get a chance to field test your design?
One.
Right? One. And so then it's like, all right, I want to make all these changes, but now I have to wait till next year. So let us help you save 3 or 4 seasons by going through a few biggies, right?
Yeah, I think you said this also on the Discord server. You know, I've done this wrong many more times than you have, so I have some good insight for you.
Yeah, pretty much. So just to recap from our harvesters episode. When you're mechanically harvesting hops, there's two stages, right? There's stripping the bind, getting all the leaves and cones off. Well, getting all the cones off, the leaves come with them. And then there's separating and sorting. And people focus, in general, when I see home-built harvesters, people focus way too much on the stripping and not nearly enough on the sorting. Stripping is the easy part. That is the most straightforward process of the entire operation. There are a couple of critical things, but there's not a lot of brain work that needs to go into that. Sorting, on the other hand, is a whole nother monster. Every single production model of a quote small scale harvester that we've run across completely neglect the sorting aspect. And that's where people are doing some sort of farm engineered add-on in order to get the things to sort correctly because they spend far too much time on the mechanics of stripping.
Because really sorting ends up becoming a manual process at that point. And the purpose of this machine is to save the bodies that were doing that.
Correct. That's exactly right. And so you move the labor to a different operation instead of reducing the labor. that was the big deal with when we designed the Bion 3060. People got all bent out of shape that its throughput was so low, you know, 30 to 60 Bions an hour. That's what the 3060 stands for, right? But the fact of the matter was, is they didn't have to have anybody sorting anything because two-thirds of the machine was sorting. So, and I remember when we had the first production models out, one of our partners was like, yeah, they were losing too many cones over the top of the sorter. And so I set one of our employees down there with a 5-gallon bucket and said, pick up every hop cone that comes over the top. Inside of an hour, he had maybe a quarter of a 5-gallon bucket.
So nothing.
Yeah. So nothing. And I'm like, okay, so I just spent $15 to save $2 worth of hops. Right? So that's something else folks need to consider when you're mechanically harvesting. You're doing this for throughput, so don't kill yourself with the stuff you're losing over the top. Mm-hmm. There is going to be loss, period. And people think that hand harvesting is 100%. It is not. It's 100% for about the first 20 minutes you're doing it. And then people get bored to tears, and then they're like, nope, they just start grabbing and yanking, and you get a bunch of cone shatter, you get a bunch of leaves in there or clusters, so it's not 100% either.
Okay, you got to pause so I can write down grabbing and yanking as the episode title.
Grabbing and yanking? Oh, it'll get better, I'm sure. More coffee. Okay, so let's talk about these two stages, right? And the things that we've learned. So the number one design I see growers building for themselves for a stripper is a rotor, right? So a drum with picking fingers on it that rotate and basically sweep the cones off of a bine. That's a very standard Florian Downauer back in the 20s and the teens patented that design. Granted, it's off patent now, right? But that's the design Wolf uses. And it's extremely efficient. Mm-hmm. Don't try to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, and those picking fingers are available all over the place. I mean, it's to your point. Don't make those yourself. They're out there. They're very easy to obtain.
And I've always got my parts right from Downauer Manufacturing. So look them up online. They sell the fingers. They sell the clips that hold the fingers down. Rivets, if you want to use them. Everything. Very, very good. Tom Fraser is the president. He's a friend of mine now. And way back in the day when we started asking questions about this, he was always very forthcoming about, you know, hop harvesters and what they look like. Because, you know, his harvesters are the harvesters you build, and then you build the building around them. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, I could build you a one-line operation for about $800,000. I'm like, oh, okay. How about just the fingers? So I would buy them in a box of 100 for, like, 10 cents a piece. I mean, they were cheap. Mm-hmm. You're going to use a drum. And most small scale designs use a single drum. I think that's fine to start off with. And even the 3060 was a single drum. But if we were going to increase the throughput, right? So, and by increase the throughput, I don't mean shove more plants through it. It's take less time to strip the bine, right? Then you need to have more drums. And the drums would have to pick top and bottom at the same time. So you want to think about that. In a traditional design, the way you feed the bine in, like if it was going to be pulled through, imagine sort of like one of those old-fashioned washing machine ring rollers, right? Where sure. You put your underwear through it and you run the crank and it squishes the water out. Mm-hmm. So you'd have basically two counter-rotating drums, one above the other, that the bine would go through.
Right, so you're picking from the top and the bottom at the same time.
Right, right. And then you would be able to adjust that gap between them based on how bushy the bine was and all that kind of stuff. And the big deal here is, which direction the rotors rotate. So if you're going to drag the whole bine through the system, you're going to generally stick the cut end, the butt end in first, right?
Hmm, all right.
It's not like the top, you know, that comes off the top of the plant. You would be sticking the butt end in first, and it would be pulled through the system.
And I mean, that end is certainly more meaty, easier to grab. It's yep. less likely to break off as it's pulling the rest of the weight of the bind through.
Correct. Yep. Think about what you don't want to have happen is you don't want to have this harvester, these rotors, ripping sidearms off. Because once a sidearm gets ripped off, it doesn't get picked for shit. Mm-hmm. Certainly on a small-scale harvester, you would need to add a separate, what they call a cluster buster, a separate doodad to pick those bind or pick the sidearms. And that's a whole, we're not going to talk about that because it's complicated. So the idea is if you can keep those sidearms attached as it goes through, you're going to get a much better, cleaner pick. If you think about how sidearms form, you got your main bind going up, right? And then those sidearms form as branches and they droop down. But if you look at that angle of where the sidearms attach to the main bind, it's like they're going up and then they droop down. So what you don't want to do is grab that sidearm and yank downwards because you're going to break it right off. Mm-hmm. You want to actually sweep it back sort of up towards the what would be the top of the bind and have those rotors sweeping backwards. That's going to produce the best, cleanest pick, and you're going to break off the least number of sidearms that way. So that would mean if you're starting butt end first that your rotors are actually turning basically towards the person feeding the hop bind in, right?
Right.
Because you want to sweep the sidearms back. That means it's spitting cones at you. So you're going to have to put some sort of flappy doodles down there in order to keep it from spitting all your cones back at you.
I'm sure there's some sort of a business to be made of, you know, getting hop cones thrown at you for the beer obsessed.
Probably. There probably is. If you're doing it that way, feeding the butt end in first, the rotor should be spinning such that it's, you know, spitting cones at you. If you're going to use sort of what we call the grab and pull method, where you have two rotors that are spinning away from you, even one rotor spinning away from you, you're going to have to be sticking the big bushy end, the top end of the top of the bind in. And that's usually the least manageable to get in there, right? Because it's all bushed out and you're not going to get a clean pick.
Sure.
So what I would encourage people to do is think about, you know, like on a wolf harvester, you've got this chain and these pinch blocks, we call them, that ride in a track. And literally what you're doing is you're taking that big woody, meaty bind part and you're cramming it behind the block. And it's just friction that drags this thing through the harvester. So what I would encourage people to do is look at, this top and bottom counter-rotating rotors. And, you know, yours doesn't have to be continuously operating, right? You can stop it, thread part of your bind through and start it up again and have somebody on the other end just slowly pulling it through. Mm-hmm. It could be that simple, right? One at a time. Once you understand those mechanisms, then you can start thinking about, well, maybe I have a little take-up wheel on the other side where I just stick the bind in and it slowly pulls it through. All sorts of creative ideas that you can do. But I would highly encourage people to have a rotor on the top, a rotor on the bottom that counter-rotate. And if you're sticking the butt end in first, the wheels would basically be spinning. Drums would be spinning such that they are tossing cones back at you. So that's a good pointer. The other thing that I see people doing with their rotors is that they've only got three or four rows of teeth of picking fingers on them. And the rotor is relatively small in diameter. And that's a big mistake. We had that, and it was a big mistake, because the only way that a hop harvester actually strips your bind is when those teeth encounter cones, and you want to do that as gently as possible. So if you have fewer rows of picking fingers, and you're like, "Well, man, this thing's going really slow. It's only going like 20 RPM." Well, over time, you know, per unit time, those fingers aren't really doing much contacting, right? Mm-hmm. So you're like, well, this has to go faster, so I'm going to speed this up. So, you know, it's actually the fingers are contacting the bind more frequently.
But then you're going to tear.
Exactly. So now you're adding energy, and instead of picking the cone, you're shattering it or you're breaking it, and it becomes too aggressive. So you're way better off increasing the size of your rotor and adding more fingers. How many fingers? I'd say at least 10 rows. of fingers, if not more. I think my Wolf Harvester R140 had the drum itself, just without the diameter of the drum before the fingers were attached, were probably 16 inches. And then I bet it had 20 rows of fingers on it, and had six drums. So that's how you get up to X number, 140 binds an hour, is by having more fingers picking, at a lower RPM, and then having more drums. That's where your throughput comes from.
And I know we've talked before about a situation you specifically encountered of a harvester that was not hitting those numbers, and it was because it was running too fast, and you were getting shattering and things like that, that actually slowing the machine down increased the throughput.
Correct. Yep. Faster is not better. That's for sure. So people would, hey, I've got this thing turned up to 11, basically, and it's only giving me half. Where's my yield going? You look at these plants, and they got huge numbers of cones on them, and they look great, but I'm just not getting anything going into the dryer. And then you look at their trash line, you see all these bracts going out the other end, and it's like, hey, Junior, slow this thing down, and you're going to get a better pick. Mm-hmm. And then lo and behold, all of a sudden the dryer's filling up, just so that one little thing changed the entire performance.
They are sensitive little plants. We have to treat them gently.
They are. And you know what? The longer you leave that plant sit after it's been cut, the more shatter you're going to get. Uh-huh. So as that plant loses moisture, which it will very quickly once you cut it, those cones lose water pressure. It's called turgor, T-U-R-G-O-R pressure. And they become more limp, and they're easy to shatter that way. So only cut what you can harvest through that machine, I would say, in a half an hour. So for you small-scale growers, that may mean you're only cutting one or two plants at a time, and that's okay. Hmm. You'll get much better throughput instead of going out cutting an entire row, knowing full and well you can't do more than 10 plants in an hour.
Interesting, because that does fly in the face a bit of the efficiency side of getting out there and cutting. It depends on how many people you've got doing things simultaneously as well.
Correct. Start small, keep going. So we talked about rotor direction. We talked about how big your rotor drum should be and the number of fingers you've had on it. And that speed kills, right, on your rotors. Slow it down and be more deliberate about it. And if you're finding that it's going too slow, like the process is going too slowly, you either need to add more fingers to your rotor drum or you need to add more rotors. And usually both. Looking at my list here. Oh, how fast? How fast should my rotor spin? I hear that all the time. Ideally, you're going to have it be variable. I think I told the Discord folks that it's usually between 60 and 120 RPMs, but you want it sort of infinitely adjustable. 120 RPMs is pretty aggressive. Mm-hmm. So I would think more towards the 60. So that's basically one revolution per second. And people are like, wow, that's slow, and I've only got four rows of fingers. Exactly. Add more fingers. Honestly, that's really all there is to stripping. Make sure that if you've got opposing rotors, that you can adjust the gap between them, because that changes by variety.
Very important in the design phase there to make sure you can move those.
Very important in the design phase. Should we move on to sorting,
the hard part? Sorting is the tough one, and probably the one where you have you see more, how do I put this? You see lots of different ideas and ways to do this. Yeah, whereas picking is what it is. It's a pretty much an industry standard to do it.
Right. And then you're like, okay, now I got to sort these leaves from these cones, and what's the one thing you see, the number one thing you see in terms of hop sorting
child labor.
Child labor, yep, exactly. Find the shiny. No, we don't. Sorry, as a Futurama reference. The one thing you see on social media or on picture, online videos, things are what we call dribble belts. Mm-hmm. Right, and so they're these, basically think of a treadmill, a steeply inclined treadmill with a bunch of cones rolling down it, and somehow another flat leaves stick to it and go up over the top. Round cones roll down, right? That's true. That is part of the sorting operation, but it's not the sorting operation. That's like at the very, very end. dribble belts are basically polishers. They're getting the leaves that didn't get sorted out from the primary sort. And you never see that because it's enclosed. People think that, and how do I want to put this? The designers of these small-scale harvesters all go to dribble belts, because that's what they see online. Oh, you got to have a bunch of dribble belts, and so we'll put like four in there. But they get overloaded because dribble belts are only for the final polish. The primary sorting method to get rid of leaves and let cones fall past it is what we call error classification. When you're trying to sort dissimilar materials, the first thing you do in any industry is make use of its physical properties. In this case, leaves are very flat and very wide, so they catch air quite easily.
Yep, whereas hops will roll.
Right. They're round, they're very aerodynamic, they don't present much surface area to airflow, so they will fall through an airstream, whereas a leaf will get caught by it and taken away, right? Your number one, growers, listen to me, if you take nothing else away from this podcast, your number one sorting method has to be error classification. Period. Now, how do you do that? Well, James said, well, we have to have a bunch of air, so I'm going to get a leaf blower, and I'm going to have it blow air through a falling stream of hops and leaves. Yep, you could do that. You absolutely could do that. Or you could have a fan, right, on the other side, sucking, that's pulling everything away. Yep, you could do that too. But you have to understand that you're going to need to be able to vary that airflow. And you're also going to want to make sure that, depending on how much debris is falling through from the rotors, you know, if you are having a really aggressive, stripping operation and you've really got that dialed in, you may overwhelm your airflow with debris and not get a good sort. So then you're like, well, then now what am I going to do? Am I going to need more air? Well, that's one way. If you add more air, like more pressure, now you're going to start blowing cones into your waste stream, right? So you have to be able to dial that in, that airflow in just right. I encourage you, growers, to look at a Wolf harvester and look at like an old 140, 170, and look at how it handles the airstream. So what they do, what they've done is they have, after all the hops are stripped from the rotors, there's a conveyor belt that brings all that debris to the front of the machine where you're feeding hops in, and they come cascading down over the edge past a, it's a big gap, and there's a big, two big fans on the sides of this machine. You'll see them sort of like tubas sticking out the side. And those are fans creating negative pressure. And so they're sucking air into the machine, but there's a mesh screen in there that rotates. What it's doing is it's creating negative pressure and sucking leaves out of that falling cascading stream of hop debris. It's sucking leaves against that mesh screen, and the mesh screen is rotating up out of the way. So it's carrying the leaves and debris away and presenting fresh, empty, naked screen beneath it, so more leaves so can be sucked against it and carried away. So it's like a conveyor belt that's carrying debris away.
And I imagine once it carries it away, it gets out of the airflow, so those leaves then fall somewhere else.
Yep, they go into the trash.
Yep, and then you have a fresh screen to come back and collect more.
Yep, and if you look at some of the older designs, it was a rotating drum that was a mesh drum that debris from stripping cones and leaves came and were presented into sort of this vertical shaft where air was being pulled through it against a rotating drum that was mesh. And the top and the bottom of that vertical channel where the debris was falling through were sealed against that drum to some extent with like brushes, so that as that drum rotated, right, it's mesh, there's negative pressure being pulled through that drum. The leaves are getting sucked to it, and as the drum rotates through past those sealed brushes, then there was like a solid wall back there where there was no suction, and there was another brush that was brushing the leaves off the drum, and it was going out into the garbage. That worked great. the way that we tackled it with the Bind 3060 was, if I may say so, pretty damn ingenious. And it worked really well. I think it worked the best part of the whole operation. So we had combined the dribble belt with the air classifier. But before we did that, everything ran through a big trommel screen. So a big open mesh screen that hops could fall through, but leaves couldn't. And it was on a slight angle so that was doing the primary sort of all the big giant leaves and any sidearms, right, that got ripped off. So we could grab those and run them back through the machine. And so this trommel screen had holes in it that were probably an inch and a half by inch and a half, maybe a little bigger, so that cones could fall through it and small leaves onto this inclined belt. The belt was mesh. So just like I talked about that mesh screen in the Wolf that leaves got sucked to, we had two fans underneath of this inclined belt that was pulling negative pressure. So the leaves would get stuck to the belt and get carried up and over the top, where then the vacuum broke because there's no airflow. And the belt was inclined so that the cones rolled down. And it worked great. Worked fantastic. And that was it. That was all the more complicated it needed to be. And that sorter could handle two or three stripping units. Easy peasy. So we're like, guess we should have built that stripper bigger.
Yeah, well, and as you just finished saying with the stripper, the thing that we could have done better there was to have two drums.
Yep.
More fingers and improve that side of it. But yeah, the sorter piece worked extremely well.
Yep. When you're dealing with the sorter, you'll be surprised at how much of an incline that sorter belt needs in order for those cones to roll. I mean, when we first started, we had that bed, that sorter bed, able to tilt up to about 45 degrees. Because we're like, yeah, that's enough. We didn't know. No, it needed to be more like 75 degrees in order to get good sorting.
Yeah, hop cones are not really round.
No, they're not, but you've also got a lot of air pressure, you know, negative pressure that's trying to hold things against it, and so you need to have enough angle there to get good separating. But the biggest key there is that you can't have a static angled bed that you're planning just to go in and rake leaves off by hand. It has to rotate away and always be presenting new, fresh, empty screen.
Yeah.
Expect that if you don't have that it's going to cause you problems. And then you can use dribble belts at the end just to polish up any little leaves that might get left behind. But know that on the big machines, the only reason they use dribble belts is because their throughput is so high that if they were going to use air classification to do 99% instead of 90, that air classifier would probably have to be three times as big.
Now, you've referenced dribble belts a couple of times, but really only in passing. Let's assume there's someone out there who doesn't know what that really is.
You have a highly inclined treadmill. And that belt is rotating up, right? So it's going up the incline and rolling over the top. Mm-hmm. And they're usually a rubber belt that's textured. Some of the belts, like on a Wolf Harvester, the last dribble belt, there's three of them. The last one has like steel teeth on it, like nails, every 18 inches or so across it, that are there to grab like twigs and sidearms and any like curled up leaves that aren't flat that will roll. So they're there to help sort of separate that. But these are, you can adjust the angle on these things. And the idea is that because hop cones roll and leaves are flat, and if you have a textured belt, that the leaf will stick to it and go up with it and over the top, and the cones will roll down backwards. You have more than one of these things, because you have to figure that the first one, you're going to have pitched sort of not flat, but less steep, so that you're getting the majority of the leaves to go up and over, but you're going to get some cones too, right? Mm-hmm. And then the next one's a little bit more steep, And because there's less cones and more leaves, so then those cones can roll down because you want to separate the cones. And then the leaves go up, can go up and over. And then the last one's the steepest, so that any cones that are left go over, you know, get out of the system. And that's the one that usually had the teeth on it that would grab the leaves and take them up and over the top. And so really at that point, you should have 95% cones and 5% leaves when it's going into the dribble belt. Otherwise, it's not going to work at all. It's going to be awful. Dribble belts are just polishers. They're not there for its primary sort. And if you rely, if you're looking at them, I'm sorry, guys, and you've built your dribble belts and that's what you're doing, you're going to be sore about this after the season. Go with air classifying first. There, now you have the secrets to building your own hop harvester.
All the secrets. So get started and tell us what they look like.
Yeah. I'll write some sort of blog post with some pictures or some badly hand-drawing images for our patrons and put it out there on Patreon so everybody can see what I'm talking about.
Nice. And I want you to, something else that you said, and you were on a roll, I didn't want to interrupt you, but you referred to it as an aggressive stripping operation, mm-hmm. which brings us right back to how I started us with your pole dancing class, I think.
Exactly, yes.
It's nice when these things all come full circle.
We try to make a narrative here.
Yes, we do.
Hopnology, yes.
All right.
Great topic. I mean, absolutely great topic. I know our folks in the Southern Hemisphere are in the midst of harvest, or will be shortly, so which is where this topic came from. But for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, this is stuff you should be working on now. Mm-hmm.
So a piece of this that I think we do see the question quite a bit is, okay, so I understand design-wise what I need to do. Do I bring my hops to my stripper, or do I bring my stripper to my hops? Because something of this size, potentially, and you didn't really talk about size, but you can make them in a mobile capacity when they're small enough to drag around. I've seen them on wheels. Versus, you know, the other comment of, you know, build your harvester and then build a barn around it.
Right. So it all comes down to volume and what you're trying to do. Ideally, you would be doing this in the shade because, again, hops lose moisture quickly as soon as you cut them off. Mm-hmm. So get those cut binds out of the shade or into the shade, out of the sun, and that'll buy you some more time. I've seen them, you know, people say, yeah, we pull this out to the field or we haul it around to everybody else's hop yards. I mean, you can do whatever you want. You know, you don't need to have a giant building for these small things. You can put them on trailers and move them around. That's one of the good things about being a very small hop grower. But I don't know. I prefer to have mine in the shade because it's usually a lot nicer to run in the shade. Or people say, well, can I strip them out in the field and take all that stripped material back to the shed and sort it? Sure, why not? I see people do that too. But now I've got two split operations, and that means I have two split crews. So I'd rather keep them all together.
Yep. You also got a piece of equipment where you're trying to maintain angles, and you need to run electricity to it and all those things mm-hmm. that you're adding complexity and potential for failure points once you're lugging it around, as opposed to having it in one place. So, you know.
As the mechanic of our system, I wanted everything in one place.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you're an acre and a half away from your barn, and you need that particular wrench.
Yep. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. So I wanted to bring it up because it does come up in a lot of these small ones. You see them built in a mobile capacity, both from a bring them out into the field perspective, as you said, but also, you know, you mentioned the sharing side of it. And yep. You'll find that with neighboring hop yards. Oh, let's go in together on a harvester that we can move around.
So. Yeah, I would highly, highly discourage people from doing that. Mm-hmm. Because you all need it at the same time.
Yep.
And who gets it when? So it's not that simple.
Agreed. Definitely not that simple at all. It looks like a good way to save some money, but yeah.
Nope. Anyway, that's what I got. What do you
got?
Good
stuff. Good stuff. What do I got? Well, you know me. I've got housekeeping.
Housekeeping?
So we have had a bunch of new folks join us on Patreon. Thank you so much to Cameron Carnes, Dave Gleason, Mark Bonema, and someone known only as Jibu.
Jibu. Thanks, Jibu.
His name's Ryan, but he goes by Jibu.
Okay.
So they've all joined us on the Patreon page. So that you mentioned doing some blog posts about this with some diagrams and whatnot. So they'll have access to see all of that fun stuff.
Excellent.
And we appreciate everyone who comes out there and supports us, as well as following us on the Insta thing.
Insta thing. Yep.
The Insta thing. You got to see pictures of James presenting in Chicago this past week. Well, I mean, now it'll be like 2 or 3 weeks until you hear this. But you get the drill. We're living in our own little time zone here.
We are, yep.
That's it for housekeeping. That's all I got today.
That's all you got.
That's all I got.
All I got.
So you're going to have to put some sort of flappy doodles down there.